This town ain't big enough for the both of us. You ever heard a line like that? It actually comes from an old Western back in 1932, cowboy movie called The Western Code. A local hoodlum that was played by Wheeler Oakman, I'm sure you all remember him, tells Tim McCoy's visiting lawman, "This town ain't big enough for the two of us. I'm going to give you 24 hours to get out." Right? And it's just kind of become a part of our jargon, our lingo. Inspired by that line, two brothers that were part of the band called Sparks actually wrote a song by that title. It was a big hit back in the 70s over in the UK. And that concept is often used relating to incompatible people or concepts. It's going to be one or the other. Both cannot coexist. This morning, as we consider a pair of questions that Jesus asked, once he asked his disciples in Mark chapter 4, we see this principle in play regarding fear and faith. The two just don't get along. There's only room for one. Now, Mark 4:35 introduces this account. It says, "That day, when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, 'Let's go over to the other side.' Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat, and there were other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped." It starts off with that day. That day is a day when Jesus had taught a lot of parables. He had spent a lot of time teaching the crowds, and he was tired. He needed a break. But he also was going to use this opportunity as a test for his disciples, to let them practice what they had just been learning. See, it's not enough for us to learn a lesson. It's not enough for us to recite a teaching. We need to put it into practice. And the best times to exercise our faith, the best time to see if we really believe what we say we believe, are through tough times. That's why James says in James chapter 1, verse 2, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you encounter trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing." If we want to grow up in our faith, if we want to mature as Christians, it's going to take tough times to do it. We have to go through adversity. And that's why James says, consider it joy. Normally we would say, are you kidding me? I'm supposed to be happy with tough times. When things go wrong, I'm supposed to rejoice. What kind of crazy thinking is that? Well, it's actually very spiritual thinking, because those are the times that our faith grows. Those are the opportunities we have to actually put our faith in action, to see if we can pass the test. And what's about to happen with Jesus' disciples is a test, to see if their faith was real or if it was just words. Now, in this passage, Jesus is clearly tired. He was worn out from teaching the people on the west shore of the Sea of Galilee. So he tells his disciples, "Hey guys, let's get away from this crowd. Let's go on to the other side of the lake." The eastern shore in some places was uninhabited, very sparsely populated, and they could get away from the people for a while. They could get some relaxation, which they needed. Now, some of you may not know this, but the Sea of Galilee lies 686 feet below sea level. It is at the bottom of a rift between the Arabian Desert on one side and the Mediterranean Sea on the other. Cool air from the Mediterranean is drawn down through the narrow mountain passes, and it clashes with the hot, humid air lying over the lake. Winds unexpectedly whip up over the mountains and down the gorge, stirring turbulence so suddenly and violently that even today, folks that have motor-driven boats on the Sea of Galilee, they still watch the weather patterns. They are always mindful because these storms still can pop up in a moment. Very little warning, and they can be very violent. In fact, this storm was so violent that in Matthew's recording of it, he uses the word in the Greek, seismos, from which we get seismic. It's like an earthquake. This is a serious storm that just blew up in a moment's notice. The truth is, though, that every follower of Jesus encounters storms in life. And I know there are some who think that if bad things are happening to me, it must be because I did something wrong. You know, God must be getting after me because I messed up somewhere, and so God's sending me these tough times. That's not necessarily the case. Now, it's true, Jonah encountered a storm because he was disobeying God, but here the disciples were encountering a storm because they obeyed the words of Jesus. So don't immediately jump to the conclusion that, oh, these tough times are happening, God must be against me. No. God may be putting you right in that place to strengthen your faith, to test it, to see just how strong we really are. So don't interpret all adversity that God is against me. Oh, no. That's not always the case. Now, in the midst of the stormy sea, we find something most unusual, the sleeping Savior. In verse 38, we read, Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, Teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, Be quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. So despite the raging storm on the sea, Jesus is down below asleep. And it shows, first of all, that he was human, but second of all, it shows he was at perfect peace. He knew that he was right where the Father wanted him. He knew that he was okay, even though there was a storm rocking the boat. It reminds me of Psalm 4:8. I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. I've often wondered if that psalm isn't the inspiration for the children's prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep, right? Maybe, I don't know. But the truth is definitely there. Now some might wonder, how is it that Jesus can be asleep? I mean, doesn't Psalm 121 say, He who watches over you will never slumber? Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Thought Jesus was God. Oh, he's God, but he's also human. He got tired. He got exhausted, just like we do. He needed sleep, just like we do. Just like he needed food and water and everything else that a human needs. Jesus was fully human as well as fully God. But the disciples, they couldn't believe Jesus was asleep. And they said here, Teacher, are we going to drown for all you care? That's how one translator puts it. You don't care if we're going to drown? God, don't you care? How easy it is to jump to that when we get into the tough times. Where are you, God? Why don't you get me out of this? Don't you care about me? It's easy to jump to that conclusion when we don't sense that God is near us, when we don't see God's hand at work. Well, Jesus wakes up and he immediately takes care of the problem. He exercises divine power over nature. The word rebuke here, it's interesting. He rebuked the wind. It's a word that means to express strong disapproval of someone, to rebuke, speak against. William Barclay translates this as, "So when he had been wakened, he spoke sternly to the wind and said to the sea, 'Be silent, be muzzled,'" which is actually the literal translation of the Greek, "be muzzled." N.T. Wright puts it a little more simply. "He got up, scolded the wind, and said to the sea, 'Silence, shut up.'" Maybe it wasn't quite that blunt, but maybe. But the idea is Jesus gives the wind a good talking to, right? Like you might a toddler throwing a tantrum. The difference here is the wind and the waves listened. Immediately, they calmed. You know, it's interesting. The same words that Jesus used here with the wind and the waves, they're the exact same words in the original language that Mark uses in chapter 1 when Jesus is casting out an evil spirit. He uses the same words. And right here, Jesus is proving, "I have power over evil spirits. I have power over nature." He is no less than God. And because He is with us, we can have peace even in the strongest storms of our lives. He is there. He does care. He's going to see us through. And that brings us to what I'm calling the stinging supposition that Jesus presents in the form of questions. These are the two questions that our focus is on this morning. In verse 40, He said to the disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" That had to sting. You still have no faith. And notice how He puts this. There's fear and there's faith. If you are filled with fear, you have no faith. And on the flip side, when you have faith, you don't have fear. The two cannot coexist. To borrow from that phrase from earlier, there ain't room for the two of us. So one of them's got to go, and one of them will. Whatever we choose, the other one has to leave. See, the disciples had asked Jesus, "Don't you care?" Jesus shot back with, "Don't you believe? Do you still have no faith?" Jesus did not stop with the calming of the storm, because the greatest danger for the disciples was not in the wind and the waves. It was the unbelief that was still in their hearts. And we need to recognize, too, that our greatest problems are not around us. Our greatest problems are in us. Our problems are more spiritual than they are physical. We might see what's going on around us. That's the obvious situation. What's going on inside might be more important and could even be more perilous. It was their unbelief, it was their lack of faith that caused their fear. And it was that fear that made them question if Jesus really cared. We find that fear and faith are mutually exclusive in the Bible. Where you have faith, you don't have fear, but where you have fear, you don't have faith. Do you know that there is no command that is said more in the Bible than "do not fear"? Fear not, do not be afraid. One preacher allegedly counted how many of those appearances there are in the Bible. He said there's 366, one for every day of the year and even one for leap year. I'm going to take his word for it. It's there a lot. Over and over we're told, "Do not fear, do not fear, do not fear." Why? Because when we fear, we're excluding our faith. When we embrace fear, faith leaves. And that's why it is such a danger to us. Fear always accompanies adversity. That's what makes something an adversity and not just another experience. Fear often causes us to project that the very worst is going to happen. We'll never recover. All hope is lost. We'll never enjoy this again. But faith tells the opposite story. Faith says that God is in control, that all things, He is involved. He is working for our good in everything that takes place. He can take the worst situation and bring about His good. Do we believe it? Faith says that we will recover, that our final state's going to be better than what we've experienced so far. And that's what happens when we encounter the storms of life. It's calling our faith into action. But the choice has to be made. Adversity will reveal areas in which we need to act in faith, not in fear. So when hard times come, we need to say, now, this is a time where I can exercise my faith in a new way. See it as an opportunity, not as opposition. As a chance to grow, not something trying to beat us down. You know, the disciples had every reason to trust Jesus. They had seen His miraculous deeds. They knew that God was with Him. But here's the catch, and this is true for us as well. It's easy to forget what Jesus did yesterday when we're going through a storm today. We tend to have very short memories. And we can praise God for, you know, saving us from this or providing that and answering this prayer and coming through here. But boy, when we get into the midst of the next adversity, all those thoughts seem to leave us. And we're all caught up in what's happening right here and right now and what's going on around me. It's very easy to forget what Jesus has done for us in the past. Here's another point. Remember, Jesus said to them, let's go on to the other side. He already told them they're going to get there. They're going to make it to their destination. The Bible tells us we're going to make it. God's going to see us through if we hold on to our faith. So what is there to fear? But fear causes our faith to fail when we allow our circumstances to override God's word. It's a matter of focus. Do we focus on what we see or do we focus on what we know? Do we focus on what we feel? Or do we focus on what's real, what's true, what God has promised in His word? Now, Mark concludes this passage in verse 41, which in some ways is really ironic. It says, they, meaning the disciples, were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and waves obey Him. I think they were more scared after the storm was calm than they were in the midst of it, right? But it was a totally different kind of fear. It's a fear of recognizing who God is. The fear of the Lord. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the end of terrified fear. When we believe God is who He says He is, when we believe God will do what He says He will do, fear has no place. It has to leave. And that was the great lesson that Jesus taught them through this experience. Jesus had asked the disciples in verse 40, why are you so afraid? I mean, these guys are seasoned sailors. A lot of these guys, I mean, this was their place of work, right? Peter and Andrew and James and John, they were fishermen. You know, they knew this lake, and yet they were still so afraid. But He taught them that the cure for fear is faith. And now they understood who Jesus was. and they could put their faith in him. Simon Peter came to experience this in another way, firsthand. In a different storm on the same lake, the disciples are trying to keep the boat afloat again. Seemed to be an ongoing situation with them. And this time, Jesus isn't even with them. He had told them, you guys go ahead and I'll catch up with you later. It's the middle of the night. Storm is raging. They're just trying to stay afloat. And all of a sudden, they can see somebody coming out toward the boat. Now, they're in the middle of the lake. They're thinking, ah, this must be a ghost. And then somebody says, no, that's Jesus walking on the water. And in Matthew 14, 28, we read, Peter said, Lord, if it's you, command me to come out there with you. And Jesus said, come. And Peter came down out of the boat and he walked out on the water to Jesus. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's one thing to say Jesus is walking on the water because, you know, he's God. Yeah, he can do that kind of stuff. This is Peter. Old Simon. 100% human. 0% God. And he's walking on top of the water. Why? Because of his faith. Because his eyes were fixed on Jesus. And he's walking on top of the water. Craziness. And that thought must have invaded his mind. Because it says that then he looked and he saw the wind and the waves. And he thought to himself, this is nuts. What am I doing out here? Blah, blah, blah. You know, lived up to his name, Peter. Sunk like a rock. Pew. There he goes. Why? Because he lost his faith. It says he became afraid. Fear took over. And when fear comes in, faith leaves. And he begins to sink. We got to keep our eyes on Jesus. Now, when he was beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. He remembered that the Lord was still there. And he called out, he reached out, and Jesus did. He caught him. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? Again, when the faith was there, he's walking on water. When the fear is there, the faith leaves and he sinks. And I think that's a very vivid description of our lives. Not that we're going to go walk on Clinton Lake. I wouldn't advise it. Well, maybe when it's frozen, but you know what I'm talking about. But in the figurative storms of life, when we have faith, we're riding high. But when we give in to fear, we sink. And Jesus says, where's your faith, Peter? And once again, when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Bottom line is very simple. Feed your fears and your faith will starve. Feed your faith and your fears will. Your heart ain't big enough for the both of them. One of them has to go, and that choice is yours.